When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Ball Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know now. Fellow conspiracy realists, longtime listeners, we have been publishing some classic episodes that we hope you enjoy. As we have been on the road, we've been in a series of, well, you know, you get in situations, but listener mail is one of our, I saw that face.
We do.
We're being diplomatic. Listener mail and strange news, they're two of our favorite things that we want to do every week. And we have a tremendous amount of correspondence. We read every email we get. Shout out to Tamara C, who actually took us up on the poetry swap idea. You can be part of that if you'd like to email us. Shout out to everyone who has called in, and shout out to everyone who's going to join us on air in the future. Today, we're going to talk to our good friend Lucas regarding some harrowing things, some very Black Monday murder-esque concerns about banks overall in the West. We're going to get into a temporal tizzy, and this one, I'm coming in fresh. I have no idea what this one's going to be. That's a voicemail coming to us courtesy of Flummoxed. And then I was thinking, before we get into all of that super important, crazy stuff, you guys, we received an amazing letter from someone calling themselves Balloon Boys. And it just, it's nuts. It's nuts. Okay, so what do we say? Let's read it, and we can kind of, you know, mosey through it and stop at points, because I think we'll all have some stuff to weigh in on here. This is revelatory, and honestly, I am surprised that we missed this part. So here we go. Balloon Boy writes in to say, hey all, I'm here to hopefully add a bit to the balloon discussion. If any part makes an episode, I realize my name is right there, but please refer to me as Balloon Boy. Let's stop there. What are we talking about? What's Balloon Boy talking about? Just a quick recap for anybody who missed that conversation.
We're talking about the balloons that have been shot down by the United States government. The allegedly balloons, maybe, but definitely the one allegedly Chinese spy balloon that was initially shot down before all the other random balloons were shot down.
Yeah, it was not too long ago. And Balloon Boy continues and says, the U.S. scientific program is quite strong. We launch a surprising amount around the world at different times of year, talking about high altitude balloons, right? The kind of things that can leverage global weather patterns, right? To just float around the world. Balloon Boy continues, currently, our guys are out of the country as upper level winds are pushing east and will continue for another month or so, and then they'll flip and blow west. We got this correspondence toward the end of April. Balloon Boy says it's hard to imagine winds at 130,000 feet turn like that. Like they flip like that, but they do. This is part of the issue. The Chinese could only get this balloon over to us certain times of the year. And as this balloon has been floating a while, its altitude had degraded. Any attempts at controlling a balloon through propellers or jets are extremely limiting, as any weight added reduces float altitude. Therefore, these balloons are free floating. And I think that's something we talked about that, right? Like there didn't seem to be a recognizable method of propulsion for these balloons last time we talked about them, right? And what was it, North Carolina or South Carolina, where they were just trying to shoot it down?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, also those folks clearly did not know the range of their firearms because no, you're not going to hit it. Okay. Balloon Boy says, next point. Standard scientific balloons float between 105 to 135,000 feet, and they're at the size of 10 to 60 million cubic feet, so they're easily seen from the ground. These balloons are about the size of a football stadium and float. They even glow 15 to 20 minutes after sundown due to the curvature of the Earth. UFO explanation, I think. Right?
That's maybe. Really interesting, right? Let's just explain that briefly, Ben. The idea is that the curvature of the Earth is such that even when the sun appears to be completely set in the sky, the angle of that sunlight can still reach up into the atmosphere at those heights. So it will illuminate the balloon as though it's still bright and shiny while everything else appears dark.
Yeah, perfectly. And think about it. You know, if you're not an expert on these things, you're going to see a UFO. You're going to ask, what is that massive floating thing in the sky that is clearly not a balloon? Anyway, Balloon Boy continues, as for payload, depending on the size of balloon, they can carry between 1,000 to 7,500-ish pounds of payload. The payloads that go on ours range anywhere from atmospheric weather instruments, telescopes. And Balloon Boy here says, they're looking up, I promise. Nice. To solar radiation detectors, to honestly anything the scientists can dream up. Here's the kicker. Balloon Boy says, I tell you this, as our season is going to start up in July and continue through October, and I expect the sightings to spike due to this year's events. I realize this is a bit of a novel, but it's a complex subject. Any further questions, feel free to reach out. Kind regards, Balloon Boy. There is a season for spy balloons? Are you kidding me? What it's like, what's that seafood rule where you can only eat some kinds of seafood during months that end with certain letters? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, it's oysters, I think. Specifically, like the certain. I think it's. Yeah. What is it? R. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Months to end with R. So wait. So are high altitude spy balloons like the oysters of
sky oysters?
Yeah. They're sky oysters. Okay. Oh, cool.
Now let me clarify something here. Is Balloon Boy stating that these are spy balloons? Or
no, you're right.
Like weather balloons, observation balloons?
Well, I believe what Balloon Boy, who is writing from expertise here, I believe what Balloon Boy is saying is that on their end, on the U.S. side, these are scientific balloons, right? They're gathering data. They're observational. They're monitoring.
Isn't that what China said they were doing too? So maybe sure. Balloon Boy is talking about spy balloons.
Hey, you guys, give it back. It's like that scene in, what was it? The Sandlot, I think, where they throw the ball, the ball goes over the fence and they have to go into the scary guy's house, right?
The beast.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this, and the reason we want to highlight this one, is that it shows us there is a predictability, right? There is a pattern. Now, of course, thing about a high altitude balloon is that it is inherently dual use technology. The payload is, as Balloon Boy said, honestly, anything the scientist can dream up or is mandated to put on there. I think it's neat. I want to fly our kite out here for this prediction and see, you know, let's play these games. Let's see whether the sightings of foreign-made balloons, high-altitude balloons, start to ramp up from July to October. We live in interesting times, I imagine. With that being said, obviously, like we talked about earlier, obviously, these balloons going up in the sky, the vast majority are made by very smart, very cool, dare I say, very optimistic groups of scientists around the world who have coordinated their schedule such that they can, you know, when they're playing above board, they can share all their data together. Because human beings, even now in 2023, have not totally figured out global weather patterns. So these balloons are important. Of course, they lead to crazy stories all the time, right? All the way back to the days of Project Mogul. But gotta be honest, this just makes me want to get in a blimp, in a dirigible. So bad. How come? How come we haven't been in a blimp yet? Can we go?
Can you rent a blimp? That already sounds like a business right there, doesn't it? Rent a blimp?
Rent a
yes.
blimp.
Mm-hmm. I'm in. Let's go.
Where do you investor. Tether them, though? You know, where do you park your blimp? Seems like you're limited
well, I'll tell
real
you.
Estate for that.
I'll
okay.
tell you.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll tell you. There was a story that I can't believe I forgot to bring up to you guys. Came out of CNN, of all places, Monday, May 1st, about allegedly a satellite image of a, quote, high-tech Chinese military blimp. And it was the
That's
one of the
right.
weirdest stories.
That's right, it got
stories.
Spotted from the air, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't, I don't see a dang blimp in that satellite imagery. I don't know
You see a white dot, you see a white, like, oval. Yeah.
It looks great. No, there's like a gray amorphous thing that might just be a runway and it's a bunch of tarps, they said, that are different colors because it's, it's being worked on? I don't know. Whatever. It was just a really weird story about a blimp that got caught at a hangar. And they're like, oh, man, maybe this is the new tech that we've been missing. Whatever.
I want to go in an airship so bad. A dirigible, you know, you name it.
Just sounds so much more dramatic, doesn't it? Mm-hmm, I love
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm. It's like saying spectacle instead of glasses, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? Spectacles, I guess. So help us get in a blimp. Folks, or an airship of any sort, you know, here in the U.S., they're not frequented by civilians. Unfortunately, airships, powered airships like a dirigible, are relatively rare, I want to say, but that might not be the case for much longer. Anyway, folks, the reason we're bringing this up, big, big thanks to Balloon Boy, is the following. Through the rest of this year, from July to October, play along at home with us. We would love your help in measuring whether there is an actual uptick in high altitude balloon sightings here in the U.S. and across the world. Again, in all fairness, the vast majority of these are not weaponized surveillance. The vast majority are scientific surveillance, gathering meteorological data and so on. We're not looking for those. We're looking for the minority, you know, we're looking for the cool ones, right? So we're going to pause it there. We're going to have a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with more messages from you.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Guys, this isn't the voicemail that I told you I'm going to play, but I mentioned this person in our previous Strange News, and they left a very short message. I just wanted you guys to hear it before we
move forward. Oh, is this Cadet?
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Hey, I use they, them pronouns. You can call me Cadet. I'm calling from Baltimore. And I just wanted to say that I loved y'all's episode with Illumination Global Unlimited. I'm just blown away, and I want more of that, please, and thank you. I was going to say something else, and I can't remember, of course. I just want you guys to know, at the end of every podcast, when you say it with me, STDWITK, I do it every single time. Okay. Bye, love you.
You know what? We just got new digs, right, at our offices here in Atlanta, and I think some more in-person recording might be in our horizon. So maybe we can get back to doing the famous chant.
I think we would all love that. Hopefully we can. Thank you, Cadet, for sending that message to us and
Thank
for sending
you.
the message afterwards that said, oh, I forgot to tell you, you can use my message. You can use my message. Thanks for doing that. Note to everybody who calls in. Always do that. Good form.
Please do. Please do.
Good form.
And also remember, whenever you have something you want to relate to our fellow listeners, if it needs to go in depth, do send an email. We read every one we get. That's the best place to send us links. That's the best place to write everything out. But man, okay. Illumination Global Unlimited. Matt, I assume you forwarded that compliment to corporate, right?
Well, no, they got it before it hit my inbox. So
they got it before us. Yeah, they always, yeah. God, how? They always do. They can get us in a blimp. I bet you IGU can get us in a blimp.
It's that Microsoft AI.
The famous IGU blimp. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Here it comes. This message comes to us from someone I'm calling flummoxed because I can't quite make out what the second F word is in here afterwards. You guys tell me. This is from flummoxed.
Hey, guys. This is flummoxed in Frontenac. I'm a big fan, longtime listener. I've always wanted to call in and give you guys something interesting to talk about. And something definitely happened with my wife and I these last few days. We decided to take a trip, an Airbnb getaway to a 100-year-old chalet on the Ottawa-Quebec border in Ontario. And a few strange things happened. Namely, we somehow didn't realize that we were driving into one of the worst ice storms in recent history, probably decades. People dead, debris all over the roads, black ice, fog. It was just... it's like Silent Hill and a blizzard mixed together, but we managed to get there in one piece. And a few weird things happened, kind of the thrust of what I'm talking about. Whenever I went through the door to check it out, the power was out. And I also, I later found out that my wristwatch, my trusty Fossil, had died the second I went through the door, like on the dot. I know because I just checked the time before I went inside. We later went to check the time because there was a clock on the wall. And we confirmed that the time was exactly right with our phones. But a few minutes later, we realized that either the clock had never worked or it died the second we checked it because it was not tracking the time. It's just the perfect time to check it. And then to top it all off, this temporal tizzy, we get home and the battery-operated clock on our wall has died at the exact same time that the clock in the chalet had died. It was just... I don't understand it. It's all very creepy. Of course, it ought to be coincidental, but like that's a bit much, isn't it? How does that happen? Also, this place was definitely haunted. At one point, I was sneaking around in my underwear with a frying pan, trying to find an intruder. We definitely heard, but definitely was not there. So, I don't know. What do you guys think of this sort of the alignment of time falling in or out of place? I don't know. Do you have any stories like that? I don't know what to make of it. Anyway, cheers, guys. Love the show. See ya.
Flummoxed in Frontenac. Awesome.
Yeah, what is that?
City. It's a municipality in Quebec.
Oh.
Yeah, it is Le Granite Regional County Municipality.
And the temporal slip. At first you had my attention, sir. Now you have my interest. Or what? How did that quote go?
Whichever, that works. Quote?
No, I don't think that's the right one. I don't think that's the right one. But yes, this is something that's super common, right, Matt? People have lost time. I want to shout out again. I know I'm a broken record here, but again, our fantastic exploration of the bicameral mind with our good friend or ride or die, Joe McCormick from Stuff to Blow Your Mind. There's a moment in there in the very beginning wherein Joe... walks us through a thought experiment about driving, right? And how driving becomes a kind of self-hypnosis, which is absolutely true. And it's kind of distressing sometimes when we think through routine activities that we conduct and how our brains sometimes just decide this doesn't need to be on the books. We don't need receipts. For this one, right?
Dude, if you want to go super deep in that, go listen to the first season of Strange Arrivals. That's a whole other podcast you can search for right now.
Right.
They go into the Betty and Barney Hill story, and which really centers around some lost time and then exploring in various attempts, getting back to that time that was lost and figuring out what the heck happened. Really weird stuff.
What's the most time you've ever lost? Have you guys ever had... a slip, A Wrinkle in Time.
Good book. Bad movie. No, not like that. No.
Okay.
For me, it's when I have fevers. So if I if my body is ever at a point where it reaches above 101 degrees Fahrenheit, yeah. then I will lose time. But it's usually just me falling asleep at unintended times, right?
I was going to say that's a fugue state of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say we definitely got an email in the past from a listener who had a bout of lost time while driving in the car. And like they looked up at the clock and there was a gap and it was, I can't remember the exact details, but I think they associated it with seeing an unusual visual phenomenon as well.
Because you might have been sleeping accidentally. Whoops, it was a dream.
Where we landed, I believe, in that conversation. Because, the hypnosis, just highway hypnosis, it can, especially at night when you're already a little bit on the edge of sleepiness, it can lull you into that. And then you kind of pop out of it and you're like, whoa, it really is kind of a very jarring feeling.
But Flummoxed is talking about something very different here.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We are smashing time weirdness with potential haunting, right?
Right.
Which is, well, I'm really digging this because really we're talking about temportals. Huh?
Did you coin that?
I love a portmanteau. You're also playing with time whenever you create a portmanteau, right? We're crunching the time together. You're absolutely correct, dude. I cannot agree more. The idea that there may have been not self-hypnosis, but some sort of accordion folding, right?
Right.
Of one second to the next. It's tricky because it also brings up so many questions. Like, Flummox, we have to ask you things about, for instance, the prevalence or lack of prevalence of deja vu experiences. We have to ask what other psychological variables may have come into play. And honestly, as weird as it sounds, man, I kind of want to know your HVAC situation because of infrasound.
Oh, at the current house or at the chalet?
Yeah, at the chalet. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. That's interesting. That's interesting. But the power was out, right? So let's recap really fast. 100-year-old chalet that they enter during a massive ice storm. Okay. Mm. So energy, the exterior energy is already intense, right?
Right.
The way you feel as a human moving through all of that energy and through all of that chaos, it's creating feelings already of maybe some dread, a little anxiety, stuff like that.
Sure. You're getting primed.
You're getting primed for sure. But there's also real physical energy out there, right?
Mm.
You're entering into this old place. And the moment you enter, you look down and your wristwatch stops. Now, look, I don't believe it necessarily, but let's just say in walking through that threshold, you're entering a time bubble of some sort, right? Because of whatever factors are occurring externally, because of the day, because of the exact time, there's some kind of confluence, as you said, folding of time together. You're actually entering in to a point when that chalet was occupied at that exact same time years and years and years ago, right? And maybe it happened for them at that exact same time too, right?
What's a chalet? A fancy cabin? Like, what are we talking here?
You know, that's a great question. I would call it a cabin of some sort.
I always associate it with skiing, you know, like a Swiss ski chalet.
Well,
you know?
You have to. Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful with those terms, you know, because the robber barons of old in the U.S. certainly had places they called cottages up in New England.
Right.
But they would not fit the average person's definition of a cottage. The idea of stopping time, too, it reminds me of the old story about the two school teachers who are visiting France, and they feel that they have slipped back in time. Sometimes this is called folie à deux, but I don't, what we're describing here, Flummox, does not sound like you experienced something hallucinatory, you know, or it sounds like you're rationally introducing us to the variables. You're talking through what you know to be the facts. You know, this doesn't look, this happens to way more people than one might assume, you know? Like, also one of the questions to ask is, when is the last time you checked your watch before you walked in, right? Mm. Like, do we know exactly, did you watch the watch stop? Who watches the wristwatch? Whatever. but the also adding to, okay, let's, the HVAC situation is interesting, but then we would have to know if the power is out. The only way that infrasound would have been influencing this is if there were a separate generator, right? Like diesel powered or battery powered or something. Doesn't sound like that's the case, but Matt, flummoxed, Noel, Mission Control, everybody, all of us, NSA intern Steve, here's a question. Ice storm, old place, old structure. You know what I mean? Just the physical force can create the whispers, right?
Yeah.
Can create this sense of a presence and maybe create that sweet spot of infrasound. I don't know.
Mm. Remember, have you read Pet Sematary, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
I've recently been going through, actually, first time I've ever subscribed to a Patreon for a Stephen King podcast called Just King Things.
And they were talking.
It's freaking great if you're into that. They're going through every single one of King's books in publication order. And there's a line when Judd Crandall takes Lewis Creed to the Pet Sematary for the first time. And he says, you know, if you hear some of the sounds like whispers or laughter, it's just the loons. And I bet you they got some loons over there in Canada, too, right? Don't they have loonies, like bills that have loons on them that are called that?
Hmm.
I'm just saying, it just made me think of that. The idea of mistaking certain things for certain sounds and, you know, being in some way mystical or whatever. And loons are a very eerie sounding shriek.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Guys, I want to get back just quickly to wristwatch stops. You're in the chalet. It feels like it's haunted. It's weird. You notice the wall clock. Oh, wait, the wall clock is actually working because according to my iPhone, it's the correct time. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't the correct time. We just looked at it at the broken time somehow. We get home from the chalet and the wall clock in our house is stopped at the exact same time that that's the wall wild. Clock at the chalet was stopped. Mm. Guys, that's why I said some kind of temporal, or, you know, it's if you enter the chalet and time is messed up, that's one thing because it's the chalet, it's a bubble there. But what if it's something with the ice storm itself, as that energy moved through, it caused something to occur.
Magnetic anomaly of some kinds, yeah.
Or I like it. I don't know. It could be bigger, right? It could be the storm related. Ice storm, you storm, we all freeze in a time storm is what I'm saying. So
you're on fire today, Matt. You're on fire.
I'm digging it.
I don't know. It's weird stuff. I want to hear more from anybody out there who's experienced something like this. Please let us know. We'll tell you how to contact us at the end. But for right now, we're going to take a break, hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with more listener mail.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with one last piece of correspondence from you. In this case, we're talking to you, Lucas. Very quick email posing 2 serious issues we need answers to. Lucas writes, bank failures and the debt ceiling. What do we do if more banks fail? What can we do if the politicians don't figure out the debt situation? I think this is something that has been top of mind for all of us with the recent bank failures, you know, specifically surrounding Silicon Valley type investments, tech startup investments, venture capital firms and all of that, with Silicon Valley Bank. And there was another one. The name is escaping me now. But we also recently had a failure of another regional bank called First Republic Bank. And this is a big deal because I believe this is the second largest bank failure in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. Their stock essentially went down to zero. JP Morgan swept in and bought them up, propped up the deposits essentially, I believe invested like several billions of dollars or, basically replaced some of the deposits that were, removed when there was this run on the bank for some of the very reasons that we're talking about. And that is where a banking crisis comes from. It's the actions of people, there is instability, there's problems with the market, there is a lack of trust, a lack of confidence in the banking system, which causes an absolute kind of situation of pandemonium where you start hearing tell that people are pulling out their money and then you go and do the same thing. And then all of a sudden the banks don't have enough money to cover, what they should be able to cover. And I want to just read a quote from an AP article by Ken Sweet. He does a really good job of laying out the complexities of, where a banking crisis really comes from. But I thought a quote from a banking expert by the name of Chris Caulfield with West Monroe, who's worked with a lot of regional banks. And let's make no mistake, we're talking at this point specifically about regional banks. And he had this to say: the underlying issue, particularly at these banks, is their asset and deposit mix isn't sustainable. Deposits keep running out the door, or banks are having to pay hefty prices for them. So basically, they, what they have invested in is not in line with the money that others have, in the bank. So if there's a run on the bank and everyone takes their money and runs, if they don't have enough actual investments in other interests, whether it be property or what have you in their portfolio, then they're screwed.
Yeah, it's massively troubling. And Lucas sends us some great correspondence all the time. So thank you, man. This is a conversation that occurs in multiple versions in a lot of back rooms right now, probably as you're listening to this. Noel, one thing that's really interesting, you pointed out First Republic became the second biggest bank failure on the heels of the SVB collapse, which was, that was going to be the second biggest bank failure. Right.
Yeah.
So that was just not too long ago. I think we were on the road in Texas or California or somewhere. And we got some news about this. The question that everybody has on their mind really is similar to your question about diversification. So First Republic committed the same kind of Icarus sin that the SVB committed, which is their clients, their customers, were often well over the federally insured, what's that limit, $250,000 mm-hmm. US? They were well over the FDIC insurance limit, and they weren't, to your point, they weren't diversified. And First Republic also doesn't seem as though it distributed its eggs in multiple baskets. You know, like it's scary to think about, because so much of investment is sort of weaponized psychology, right? It's confidence. The system only works so long as everyone agrees it works, like the painted lines on pavement on the interstate.
It's weird to think about, you guys. I sorry, I don't mean to jump in, Ben.
Okay.
Just speaking on that limit, the FDIC limit for insured money deposits in accounts, right, of $250,000. So if you're an individual like any of us or you listening, you probably won't ever have to worry about your money sitting in a bank if FDIC is still in place and it still has enough money in those giant accounts to help people out if there's a massive run on major banks and major banks fail. If that holds up, then we're good to go. If you have way more money than that, then obviously you got to move that money around to separate banking institutions so you never go over that limit. Right. That's one thing you could do. I was reading just today, actually this morning, about making sure you, just what you said, Noel, move your money into separate investment accounts if you go over that 250K limit. The weird thing is when you get into companies, right? Because corporations, companies have operating costs that are in the millions or hundreds of millions or even up to $1 billion. You know, I don't know how many companies have $1 billion operating budgets, but some of them may, some of the massive ones. That's when it's weird, because what banking institutions do you hold all that money in to actually pay out people on an ongoing basis? How much money do you need in a single account or dozen accounts in order to get business done? And when stuff goes down with that major banking institution, what do you do as a corporation to make sure your money is safe? I think that's where it gets scary.
Morgan.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, Wells Fargo, Bank of America go, hey, here's $30 billion.
Right.
Hope this helps.
What up, JP?
And you guys, I mean, like, you know, this is the crisis that we're seeing is, it seems to be isolated to these smaller and medium-sized regional banks. And to your point, Matt, you know, with FDIC insurance, $250,000. You know, that's a respectable amount of money to have in the bank. Sure, it doesn't make you like mega rich, though. So what are the mega rich doing? Are they pulling their money out? Are they putting it in like off-seas over
Panama?
Dirigibles.
Okay,
dirigibles.
They're putting all in dirigibles.
Airships.
Or maybe mattress firm. Yeah.
Swiss.
Moving to New Zealand, you know, maybe P.O. boxes in the right countries. Like, the more money you have, the easier it is to accrue money, and the easier it is to protect money, right? Like, there's definitely a feedback loop there. In terms of what those individuals might do, I posit to you guys that at the tippity top, we need to stop thinking about these people as people in this function. You need to think of them more as perpetual institutions.
Right, countries, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, under themselves. Because if they made a move like that, or if there was a run on the bank from the super rich like that, and that could really cause a serious domino effect that could potentially crash larger banks, right?
Mm. Yeah, and the more dangerous thing here is, look, I know this is going to ruffle some feathers, but what folks need to understand, what everybody needs to openly admit, is that at the top of the financial hierarchy, right, the so-called 0.01 or 0.001%ers or whatever you want to call them, those folks have some pretty communistic views in some ways. They definitely want to own the means of production, if you get what I'm saying. So how, when you talk about, when an average person just hanging out talks about $250,000, you don't own the presses that create that money, right? You don't get to call the Fed and talk turkey about interest rates. These people can touch those institutions. They can influence it. I'm just saying, like, why is bankruptcy absolutely terrible and an existential threat for the average person? But for a safety billionaire, a billionaire, it's like, oh, I had an interesting Thursday. You know what I mean? Like this, I think the game is rigged, man. I think it's weird that the cooperative confidence in these institutions has given them so much power. But also, Noel, Matt, I don't know about you guys. I don't know what a more feasible approach is. I don't know what the alternative is. And it's a house of cards, though. If one collapses, like, it's, you got to cauterize the wound or else the rest of it can go too.
It's true.
Tell me. Good news.
Do what friend of the show, David Kari Weber Chappelle does. Just buy up most of the land in your small town in Ohio. if you're a dirigible having or potentially having person, just buy up the land, because if you've paid for that land and you've got the deeds, then you've got that money and no bank is going to take it from you. I don't know. That's pretty smart. People are, I guess some people are upset with him for doing this, but it's a smart move.
Who's upset?
What is the name of that town? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know the name. It's Ohio. Yellow Springs.
Okay. You know, I guess we should say that dirigibles, jokes aside, might not be the absolute best place to put your money. But one of the biggest questions that I think Lucas is getting at here, Noel, is the idea of which institution is to be trusted. You know, like during the pandemic and several years before, a lot of very well-to-do people were buying land in New Zealand, because New Zealand is a top-notch place to be when the world burns down. But where can people, like, even if you don't agree with money, with the concept of money, which is a religion, you have to participate in it. Right. We have to live in this church to some degree to survive. So where could people safely put their assets if they can't use dirigibles?
Yeah, I'm going to put out mattresses again. Just, you know, the old trusty, perhaps a safe of some sort might be a little more dependable. But, you know,
ammunition and MREs.
It's all freaky stuff, y'all. I think, you know. As we're discussing this, I think we were all kind of frantically Googling stuff relating to maybe our own finances and stuff. I mean, what can you do? Is there anything that the average person can do to protect themselves from this kind of stuff?
Yes. Slowly, whenever you can, take out $20 from your bank account when you saved up. It's not easy, but do it. Take out $20. Take that $20. Hide it somewhere. Then make a stack. Once you have a stack, turn that into something seriously useful that can help you in the future, whatever it is.
A tangible asset of some sort, right? Because remember, the coupon system works very well for some people, but you cannot actually eat those coupons.
Nope.
So the big move is to, a reasonable non-paranoid move is to, every time you make a purchase, if you're at a place that offers you cash back without a fee, do what Matt said, take the, you know, like a small
if
amount.
If
you can, if it's possible, and, you know, stack your ducats and then start thinking in terms of the life that you would live if you were the only person around with no support system. Start from
and
there.
There's no power, maybe, and water is not potable out of the tap.
Oh, God. Yeah. Life straws. Can't say that's good. We're going too far.
Yeah. And last thing, guys, you know, as a homeowner, you know, what happens if there's a banking collapse? Are they going to come for your homes? You know, what happens to the secure, you know, like to the bank that maybe holds your mortgage, you know, like a Wells Fargo or a, you know, for example, Raymond James or whatever it might be.
Mm.
Well, Raymond tells me everything's fine.
What about James?
Do you guys know that I have hung out with? Never mind. I have some connections to those actual human beings. And shout out Hank Harris III.
Certain club in the country, I hear.
Yeah.
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, like, you know, one of the largest expenses for any human being is either rent or a mortgage. Mm-hmm. So if there were some, like, you know, just global banking, like Fight Club level banking collapse, what happens then? Are they going to come and try to cash in their assets, you know, being the remainder of whatever you owe? By taking your home? Like, how does that work? You know, if you can no longer afford to pay because your money has evaporated along with everyone else's money.
It depends on the amount of people. Honestly, yep. It's a numbers game. If here's the thing. If 100 people default on their mortgage, right? If 100 people get their home foreclosed, then the United States says that's their problem. If 100 million people at the same time get their homes foreclosed, then now it's the U.S.'s problem. So it's a scale, right? It's a cost benefit analysis. It's quite Machiavellian. It's quite brutal. It's quite cold. And as an individual, we must remember to focus on the things that we ourselves can directly control. That's the power you have. So, like in the situation you're talking about, the homeowner doesn't mess up at all, right? The bank messes up. Or maybe there's some ill wind abroad, right? Even to the point of like weaponized like financial warfare, which is definitely happening, right? That's what sanctions are all about. In that case, there usually is going to be, especially post 2008, there's usually going to be some kind of legal redress that you can make and say, hey, it's not me. It's this bank. I did the right thing. And that's where you'll have something like a JP Morgan or other large financial entities scoop in and say, don't worry, everything's fine. Keep driving between the lines and just keep paying your mortgage on time. And we'll take care of all the stuff backstage. But the scary point about this is that that only works up to a certain threshold. So if we're talking about the threshold where the whole casino closes, that's a very different story. I don't know. I don't want to get too apocalyptic. You know, it's a nice day outside. We're heading into the weekend.
Indeed. So maybe put a pin in this one for today and stop doom scrolling, everybody.
There we go. Because we were like doom scrolling in our three heads. I'm watching our faces as we're listening to each other about this. And I think we're all trying, like you said, Noel, we're all trying to frantically figure out what the solution would be. In the worst case scenario, we want to hear your advice. We want to hear your ideas, folks. Thanks to Lucas. Thanks to Cadet. Thanks to Flummox. Thanks to Balloon Boy. Thanks to everybody who has taken the time to join the show and be a part of stuff they don't want you to know. If you want to take a page out of their book, we have tons of ways to contact us as long as the lights are on. Before we get black bagged, you can find us online.
Boy, can you ever. We're Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, where we have our Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. Get in on the conversation there in real time. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show, however, on Instagram and TikTok.
I hope everybody has seen that sperm donor video that we made.
Oh, boy.
It was so good, guys. It was very, just well executed. Yeah,
West, our amazing cinematographer, really knocked it out of the park. And that was a full collaboration with the four of us. Super, super fun to do. We hope you guys are enjoying that content.
And the next one, spoiler, if it hasn't come out yet, this is a little taste, has something to do with Bad boys, bad boy. It's so funny.
What are you going to do?
I just watched it again. It was so freaking funny. Okay. Again, follow us, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the places. Making some, in my opinion, hilarious stuff online.
And if you don't play the dopamine casino, if you're a little more old school, you like a quiet storm, you can always give us a call directly, just like Flummox did. The number is, say it with us, cadet, 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a voice, you'll hear a beep like so, beep. You'll have 3 minutes, they're yours. Go nuts, get weird with it. Give yourself that street name or nickname you always wanted. Tell us what's on your mind. Let us know if we can use your name and or message on the air. And most importantly, if you have a story to share with our fellow listeners that takes more than 3 minutes, has links, has photographs, stuff you want us to look at, Matt and Noel are tremendous video and audio experts. They can give you a keen eye and ear on things that might need some scrutiny. The best way to get that to us is through a good old-fashioned email. Just drop us a line where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenas, buenas, mis amores. This is Vico Ortiz, host of Date My Abuelita First. Each week, myself, alongside our resident abuelita, Liliana Montenegro.
Esa soy yo!
Play matchmaker for a group of hopeful romantics in this fun, flirty, and hilarious game show. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps. Listen to Date My Abuelita First on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.